Welcome to Lifelines Radio, a production of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation and JMJ Radio. I'm your host, Maria Gallagher, Legislative Director of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. With me today is Mary Ann Lahan. Welcome, Mary Ann.
Thank you, Maria, for having me on the program, and hello to your listeners, and I bet there are some of mine out there listening, too. Today I'm in the hot seat.
I'm sure there are, and we welcome you here today. First of all, do you remember where you were when you found out that Roe versus Wade had been overturned?
Do you know what? I can remember exactly where I was. I was in my little blue Volkswagen Bug, and on my VW Bug, there were peace signs and flowers. And you know what? How appropriate, because what I know now is peace, true peace, begins in the womb. And that's where the greatest war is happening every day in our nation.
That's very profound. And did you think that Roe versus Wade would be overturned in your lifetime?
I would say in the early years it seemed so daunting and perhaps almost impossible. But in recent years, as I've attended the March for Life, and I see youth and their vigor and commitment to the child in the womb, I began to believe what they would shout, "We are the pro-life generation." And they renewed my hope and my confidence that there would be a day, and I prayed I would live to see that day, when Roe was overturned.
And I want to share with you and the listeners that I was able to get a ring to commemorate the overturn of Roe versus Wade. There's a company called Culture of Life, which produces pro-life clothing and jewelry. And the ring that I have has 2 years on it. One is 1972, the year before Roe versus Wade, and the other year is 2022, the year when Roe became history. So I always have that with me. It's a profound reminder of how far we've come, but also how far we have to go.
Right, right. Yes, that's so true. And I love rings. I'll have to check that out.
Hey, I highly recommend it. It's quite a conversation starter.
Right. It makes a statement, and that's one thing, like so many of my shirts or hoodies have some pro-life message to them, and that's a beautiful way, without words, just to convey your position. Yeah, thank you, Maria.
Sure, absolutely. What do you think is our biggest pro-life challenge post-Roe?
Honestly, I think the greatest challenge we have is to speak our truths. And what I mean by that is we have a society that says, celebrate your abortion. And when celebrity is telling our students, our youth, to shout out an abortion, and it's normalized, it's become very difficult, too, to go into classrooms. And our clergy constantly needs our support when they do speak out on the pro-life issue, and our encouragement to be stronger in that, because educating and speaking the truth has become very, very difficult right now. And that is, if people realized what is true. And, you know, a shout-out to Ed and Carol Nowinski, and to JMJ Catholic Radio. How fortunate are we to be able to have this media to speak truth and educate and change hearts? You know, it's not always about just changing the laws. It's about changing people's hearts. And so we encourage classrooms and CCD groups, our church groups, to allow pro-life speakers to be part of your curriculums and your church communities to speak out. So I'd say education is one of the greatest challenges.
Now, how did you come to hold your pro-life beliefs?
You know, when people say to me, when do you begin to teach the pro-life message? I was second in order of seven kids. I was one of seven. And when did I hold my pro-life beliefs? When my mom would put our hands over her belly and say, do you feel your little brother or sister kick? And the way my mom and dad would present to us each and every time, that would be seven, that there'd be a new brother or sister. You know, we learned at a very, very young age that life is sacred and that there was a brother or a sister, not a product of conception in there. You know, there was joy in our family. So my parents really instilled in us a pro-life belief that life is sacred. But not only that, you know, my grandma and grandpa, they died in the family home, in the homestead. And when I would see the way my mom and her sisters took care of their parents, that's part of the pro-life message, that life from the womb to the tomb is sacred, and our obligation is to stand in defense of life and to embrace it with compassion and tenderness.
What is the voice of John?
Well, that's a question that I ask the Holy Spirit almost on a daily basis. You know, 45 years ago, the voice of John was given to me as my ministry in this life. And it was the voice of a little boy who had been aborted. And I found him as he lay dying on a dirty utility room counter. And so thus he was also the voice of infanticide, one of the first voices of infanticide. And I learned all the lessons from John in the short life that he lived. He did live a few hours. After I found this little baby naked, alone, on that dirty counter, I baptized him with the very water that was just used in the killing procedure, and I named him John. And so I would have told you then that one of the last words I spoke to that little boy was, I will be your voice. And his voice is the voice of 63 million children. But God had such a plan, for as my father was dying years later, I produced a little video blog, and I said to my dad, as the two of us looked at it, Daddy, I said, it's official. You're going to be a part of the voice of John, for just as that little boy spoke to the beginning of life, you will speak to issues of the end of life. And my dad said, that's swell. And we documented a little bit of those days, for my father died within weeks of us producing that little video blog. So the Holy Spirit had one last thing for my dad to accomplish in his life, but he directed John to be the voice for end-of-life issues. John also became the voice of Down syndrome. There's two members, Maria, in my organization who have Down syndrome. Both have produced radio and or video podcasts. As a matter of fact, Ed, John Frank will be on our program this month, speaking of Down syndrome. So it's an evolving voice. It speaks to post-abortive women beautifully. For one of the words that I was inspired to speak to John, that little baby, as I held him, I said, John, if your mommy knew you, if she could see you the way I see you right now, she would not have done this to you. And I spoke the words, too, that Christ spoke from the cross, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. And in that way, as I go out and speak, I have encountered so many women who bear the wound of their abortions. So John is an ever-evolving voice who just follows the Holy Spirit's guide.
That's really beautiful. Now, do you worry that with permissive laws enacted in states like New York and California, we will face more infanticide?
I absolutely do, and I think this is one of the things we all need to be aware of, is there is a slippery slope to abortion. We stepped into a slippery slope. Was infanticide happening? Yes. I mean, John spoke of that. He was the victim of infanticide, and I, who was never very politically active, as I learned to lobby, and I went before Congress in the Senate with a group of medical people, I think it was all medical people, that spoke about infanticide and what was happening in their hospitals, in their facilities. So I know it's been happening for all these years, but again, just as in abortion, once we legalize it and normalize it, and from what I understand, the governor out in California is actually putting, like, he's almost making this a moral stamp of approval from Christ the Lord, creator of the unborn child, creator of the new infant, and saying that it's compassionate. Infanticide is compassionate. So yes, by normalizing and legalizing, we will see an increase in infanticide.
What is your message to young people?
Well, I love working with young people, and I love to listen to their message to me, but I think it's so important for us to meet them where they're at. First of all, when we're with young people, they have grown up in a society that has never known a time where abortion would be considered illegal. And they have been inundated with the lies of Planned Parenthood and a pro-abortion culture. Their heroes, the celebrities of the day, normalize abortion. So I think it's so important to speak messages of respect. And in actuality, my programs for youth begin with preschool and just learning pro-life words of respect or pro-life attitudes, you know, not bullying, kindness, standing by each other, and these messages of love. And that is the message of the pro-life movement. As our youth, you know, as I'm speaking to later the high school students, of course it's a message of what is truth and what is sacredness and really just to respect their own bodies and each other. They need to be challenged to chastity. And that's the message that we very much have to present, and to our young men to, you know, assume control, because when a partner, a girlfriend, is pregnant, they have no control. And I always talk about, you know, one of the most devastating moments when I stood outside an abortion clinic was watching a young man on his knees pleading, don't do it, it's my baby too. So our youth needs to be inundated with truth, because that is certainly a difficult message to get across to them in this society.
You're listening to Lifelines Radio, recorded by JMJ Radio. I'm Maria Gallagher, and we are speaking today with veteran pro-life advocate Mary Ann Lahan. What would you say to a woman who is considering abortion?
You know, we have wonderful resources that we all need to work together. I love having the opportunity to speak to a woman. It's kind of overwhelming because you feel like there's the importance of saying the right things. But one thing I do know, Maria, is abortion and coercion go hand in hand. And so why is she choosing this? So the first step is to meet her where she's at. Is it abandonment? Is it because, you know, what is bringing her to this? The fear of her life, all her plans being changed. And I always say, you know, abortion, a pregnancy lasts for 9 months. An abortion wound lasts for a lifetime. And so meet her where she's at. Talk about adoption if she is truly unable to become a mom, and stand by her. Let her know she is not alone. I have been privileged to be with some of the women who I had worked with as they gave birth to their child, you know, and several of them had chosen adoption. And what is it that would help them, give them the courage to make those decisions? You know, speaking with the woman who is carrying a child and considering abortion, while society may make it sound like it's very empowering to be able to abort, to kill your child, you know, we have the opportunity to really empower a woman and to say, you can do it, and I'll stand by you. I will give you every resource. And, you know, when you know you're going to encounter a woman, or I probably have about three in my glove compartment at all times, but a little teddy bear or something, hand her something that marks her life. This was the first toy my child received. And sometimes just holding that will change her mind. Use the word your baby when you're talking to that woman, not the POC, not a blob of pregnancy tissue. You know, in having your baby, what is your greatest fear? But use that word over and again when you're talking to a woman who is considering abortion.
What would you say to a woman who has had an abortion and who now regrets it?
Well, first of all, it's so important to for them to recognize they are not alone in this, that there's 63 million children who have been aborted. So it's important that they realize and have the opportunity to express their grief. You know, women who have had an abortion in a society that's saying it's empowering or it's normal, or the statistics, how many women have had an abortion, they suppress that grief. They're not allowed to feel it's normal. And so what do? They might start. I not too long ago spoke to a woman who said she started cutting herself. And first of all, watching that blood and knowing that she caused the bloodshed of her child. And the other thing that she spoke of was the lack of pain. She would cut herself and not feel pain. And the first time she felt pain, she felt the pain, the emotional pain of her abortion. So she had numbed herself so much from what she had done that even physical pain she became unaware of. So that's the first step, is to allow them to express their grief, to encourage them to name their baby, and to refer them to maybe Rachel's Vineyard. And, you know, we're going to have a night of healing in our area at St. Faustina's Parish next week. And it's a night of hope and healing. I have it here in my notes. It's Tuesday, October 18th. And it will be at St. Faustina's Parish there on Hanover Street in Nanticoke. And so it's so important that you meet with people who realize your wound and recognize it and share your pain, but to know that there is a God who is so loving, there is nothing he cannot forgive, and open yourself to the healing that God plans for you. He wants for you. He's saying, come home to me. Come home to me. And on final note, I always say, our Blessed Mother, she'll rock your baby until the day you can meet that child. So it's always a privilege to speak to a post-abortive woman and guide her in her healing journey.
Why should we have more protections in place for babies with Down syndrome?
Oh my gosh, they are just such a beautiful, beautiful population. Like I said, two of my members in our chapter have Down syndrome, and they're both wonderful. John Frank, he's chairperson of the annual Christmas card contest. Catherine Riley has done a video podcast and a radio program for me. John has done a TV show, if you go to the Voice of John website, A Matter of Life, that's our TV programming, and John did a program with me. He spoke powerfully. But they have gifts. They have an ability to love, and they're just beautiful people. Like, we don't deny people the right to life because of a disability. And if you think that is right, and if that's something you would espouse to, then be careful of your own life. You know, it's funny. I was at an American Veterans Association, and there was a woman there who challenged me on taking care of Down syndrome, and I noticed that she had a cane and a brace on her other leg, and I just looked at her and I said, if having a disability is something that you think warrants the death sentence, you should think twice, you know. And that's the truth. We all have our disability some way, and if we don't, we will. And life, that's a beauty. It's a beauty to love them, because you know what? The kids with Down syndrome, they love you right back, and that's such a joy.
It is such a joy. Now, turning to a tragic topic again, do you think euthanasia is a real danger in the U.S.?
Oh, I absolutely do. And, you know, Mother Teresa spoke to this so beautifully. St. Mother Teresa left us with so many beautiful, very prophetic messages. But one of the things she said is, if you lose respect for life in the womb at any stage, eventually you will lose respect for all of life. So as we become more and more disabled, as we have diagnoses that might cost, there's the financial aspect of growing old and the health issues we face. Unfortunately, that's taken into consideration. And if you don't respect our elderly for the lives they've lived, the wars they fought, the families they raised, then yes, euthanasia is a real danger to our country.
What advice would you have for someone who is considering becoming involved in the pro-life movement?
Everyone, if you have a pulse, you're being called to become involved in the pro-life movement. And so what is your gift? You know, I have a young artist, Jen Whitner. She's as I said, an artist, and she has painted the most beautiful image of John, and she has done the annual Christmas card. Shannon Marciato sings, and so whatever your gift is, so you pray, you ask God, not does he need you, where does he need you in this pro-life movement. But yes, everybody should be involved. And if you're unsure, call your local chapter, Pennsylvanians for Human Life, or call the Pro-Life Federation, because we'll give you a job. There's a job for everybody.
Now, how can Pennsylvania become a sanctuary for the unborn?
Well, I will tell you this. We all need to realize that once Roe was overturned, it may have changed the course in where we work, for every state now holds that decision. Maria, I was at the Columbus Day event up in Scranton, and Dr. Ross spoke there, Dr. Vincent Ross. Now, he's before your time, Maria. I remember him back in 1971 as a young pediatrician who came to our area, and they wanted Dr. Ross to, they wanted an abortion clinic set up in Scranton, and Dr. Ross spearheaded Scranton chapters. He was one of the initial people in Scranton chapters pro-life organization, and he received this honor. And one of the things he said is, I never saw a product of conception. I saw a child. And he's just an amazing man. And so what I say is, stop. And the reason I brought up the Columbus Day thing, I know they're encouraging, we call it Indigenous People Day instead of Columbus Day. We need to stop looking back at destroying history and looking forward to writing tomorrow's history lessons. And
yes,
one of the
and
ways
we're going to have to leave it right there, Marianne. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, well, thank you for having me, Maria. It's been a joy.
You've been listening to Lifelines Radio. I'm your host, Maria Gallagher. Thank you for joining us. And remember, there's always a reason to choose life.